And with that, let's bring in our TSN hockey analytics writer, Travis Yost. Travis, your initial thoughts on what might be the Twitter apocalypse?
I already said that. I think I said this yesterday or 2 days ago. If Twitter goes down, I'm out. I'm out for good.
I said the exact same thing, Travis. I was like, don't look for me. I'm not providing anything else. Do not search for me.
I'm not going. Someone said, I was reading, that's what it was. 2 days ago, CNBC was trying to put out in the United States, they were trying to put out, yeah, hey, this could be a good bull case for Facebook if Twitter goes down. I'm like, no one's going back to Facebook. No one's going anywhere. We're going down with the ship on Twitter.
Yep, I like it.
The thing though is like in our line of work, Twitter is actually really it's a useful tool. Like yeah, it's a cesspool a lot of the time, but for what we do, it's a useful tool not only for getting a lot of news. You know, lineup updates, we rely on Twitter a lot, quotes from players and whatnot. And even like Travis, from your perspective,
yeah,
someone who's out there writing, like just to get your work out there, like that's where I look at Twitter and the downfall of if it does leave, I guess, and it does end up dying in the next little bit, you know, that's the stuff that's going to bother me. Not necessarily the fact that I can't tweet out my thoughts. It's what I'll miss from what I get from it.
Yeah, I think you actually hit a really important point here from a broader sports thing, a broader sports component, which is sports is and yes, us three may all be biased, but
yeah.
you go on Twitter, like sports is one of the main vehicles for why Twitter is successful as it is today, because for the most part, I mean, you go on Twitter on a Sunday, and I get not everyone is an NFL or American football fan, but if you go on Twitter on a Sunday, the only thing you see, even if you're not following any sports accounts, is, hey, look, there's a gazillion NFL games on. And by the way, the Premier League also dominates Twitter, and
yeah.
I'm not a soccer fan, and every weekend morning, I know my feed is going to be inundated with British Premier League updates. And it's like that plus, like, the broader financial markets and how news has to be delivered so quickly, so expediently in that niche. Those are like the vehicles for what's kept Twitter alive and humming for so many years. And I guess to that end, like you would imagine that it goes somewhere, but I said, I'm going down with the ship.
Yeah.
And I'll just become an old school newspaper writer where once a week I'll send a letter to my readers and saying, hey, make sure to log on to tsn.ca to read my stuff.
Well, maybe, okay, this is the last one on Twitter before we start to behave like adults, but maybe the analytics community specifically, how much do you think Twitter has expedited the rise of analytics?
A ton, and I think it also accelerated the hiring of a lot of these people into front office.
So true,
too,
yeah.
It wasn't just that, hey, look, there's a new way to think about this and there's a better way to make decisions, you know, pairing this sort of work with video analysis and some of the stuff that exists and will exist forever in the NHL. And, hey, look, this is a really good supplemental tool. It went from that and like, hey, this is why it's value added to like, hey, now it's explosive and everyone's looking at it in some capacity. And, oh, by the way, teams started realizing there were competitive advantages. Well, I can promise you, as someone who was at the very beginning stages of this, when we were doing it in like Edmonton Oilers fan blog comment sections, which it's like true story, that's where some of this evolved from. No one in the NHL was reading it there, but everyone in the NHL world, even 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago, was reading about it on Twitter. And I think Twitter, like many things, it greatly, greatly accelerated how much attention and traction this got around the league. And I think looking back, I think that's a slam dunk case. I mean, it's pretty hard to argue.
Yeah, I think I'd agree. Like that's actually a really good point that I didn't even consider is how that did help, you know, the analytics community really grow and even prospects and just, you know,
yeah,
just in general. It's, you know, as much as we clown and everyone's clown, it's like, ah, oh, Twitter's a cesspool anyways. There are segments where it's really positive for some people.
I'll give you a phenomenal example right now. This is actually the use case that we were thinking about. So I started doing this as a hobby when I entered my undergrad, and you know, I'm just this really old man. But I can tell you, by the time that this, you know, this niche, this area had become popular, and I would say entrenched and ingrained in modern hockey discussion, at least in some capacity, the amount of players and coaches that I have connected with privately through Twitter versus any other communication stream combined, it's probably 50 to 1 minimum. I mean, I've probably gotten 2 or 3 or 4 emails. I've probably gotten no less than 75, you know, messages from different players or coaches, just curious about something I was looking at, had a question. I'll never forget, I had a fourth line enforcer who was trying, like, this was about 4 or 5 years ago. He was trying to kind of reinvent this game as more of a checking line.
Whoa.
Forward. And he just in the off season was, and also a Canadian player as well. He was curious about what certain stats said about him as a player, but before he was going into this, I guess, you know, changing of the guard as a player. And we just had a good, you know, 30-minute-hour discussion back and forth about why we look at the stuff, why it matters, why it's predictive of future outcome, why coaches care about it in some cases. And, like, if you think about it, that conversation doesn't happen without Twitter, period.
Yeah, absolutely. So RIP if that's the case. But with that, we'll move on to some of your recent work. You wrote a great piece on TSN.ca this week about goal differential early in the season. Your main takeaways from that study?
Yeah, so I think this is always a good time of the year to remind people, or one of the overarching data points that you should be looking at this early in the season to gauge how a team is playing or progressing in the standings is not the win-loss record, it's goal differential. And at almost every juncture, goal differential is more indicative of how a team has played and how a team will play in the future than something like win-loss record. And a lot of it is because goal differentials are, you know, wins and losses are binary. You either won the game or you lost the game. But goal differentials have a sensitivity component to it, where you take a team like Colorado, they could win 10 games in a row. You know, the Arizona Coyotes can win 10 games in a row. But the Avalanche might win the average game by 2.5, 3 goals, right? And it's like these games aren't even close. They're blowouts versus a team that's effectively scraping by, and their record may look great, but maybe they're playing so hockey. And to me, it cuts in every direction, right? Like I think one of the most fascinating things right now in the NHL standings, and I wrote this earlier in the week, but it's still true. Toronto is, as it sits today in the Atlantic, Toronto is, I believe, in second place. I think they've got 22 points.
Yep.
I think they're 3 goals to the upside. So they've outscored their opponents by 3 goals over the course of the season. Ottawa has outscored their opponents as well by 1 goal. So there's a 2-goal spread over effectively a 2-goal differential spread over almost 20% of the season. But look where Ottawa is in the standings. They are dead last. I believe they're 9 points back as of today, despite being 2 goals worse than the Maple Leafs over the first 20% of the season. And it says a little bit about Ottawa. It says a little bit about Toronto. But more importantly, like from a front office, from a fan base, from a media perspective, it should help us calibrate or focus on what is actually working well and what is not. Like if you were Ottawa, you were probably massively frustrated with that lengthy losing streak they had at the end of October, early November. But almost every one of those games was basically score tied until the second or third period, and they lost by a single goal. Well, that tends to be pretty encouraging, at least relative to teams getting blown off the ice. Whereas a team like Toronto, you know, they're 3 goals better than their opponents over the course of the year, but like their goal differential is 0 at even strength. Their shooting percentage is in the bottom 8-9 in the league. Like there are things, if you're a Maple Leafs fan, where, you know, they're well positioned once again to make the playoffs, and there are a few people who are, I think, more bullish about the Maple Leafs prospect, ex the goaltending group, than I am. But if you look at the first, let's say, fifth of the regular season, their record is certainly better than I think their performance has been. And that, to me, and historically speaking, tends to be a bit of a bearish sign for future outcomes, all things considered. Now, again, you can have players, you know, health changes, injury changes, players get traded, players get signed and waived. The situation is always evolving and changing, but it does help us calibrate in terms of how we understand a team's talent performance.
So what part of the Maple Leafs would you say they're underachieving most that you think they really need to get going here for them to, I guess, get up to par to where we expect them to be?
Yeah, that's a really good question, because it's I love this skater group. I thought they had one of the better blue lines in the entire league, which is something, if you said 4 years ago about Toronto, would have been literally laughable. I had major concerns about the goaltending group and still do to this day. Well, the goaltending's been good. Ilya Samsonov was good early. They've gotten good relief despite injuries. The goaltending has held up way better than expected, which is a little scary if you think that's going to regress. I think the concern I have with Toronto is it's two-part. Number one, again, through the fifth of the season, they have not outscored their opponents at even strength. That is not what we are a customer expect from a lineup with this much skill. And if you look at the breakout, the Maple Leafs, at least for the first fifth of the season, they look like a top-heavy team. And irrespective of how you adjudicate any one player's performance in that lineup, if you look at their third and fourth lines in Toronto, they have been pretty underwhelming. They've been generally outchanced. They've been generally outscored on most nights. And this Toronto team, even just a year, 2 years, 3 years ago, yes, we know that most of their financial commitments are at the very top of the lineup, but they had a relatively deep team as well, where the organization had gotten pretty good and or lucky in some cases of either filling gaps through, internal call-ups or finding value on the cheap. Look what's happened this year, though. I mean, they've already waived a couple of players that haven't worked out. A couple of players they've signed just are struggling, and the performance hasn't materialized quite yet. I'm thinking of Kelly Yarncroc is a great example of that. But all this to say, the goaltending has held up, and they're winning games. They've got a lot of points in the bank, which is phenomenal. But I think there are genuine performance concerns a bit further down the lineup, especially on that third and fourth line. And obviously the absence of Jake Muzzin is not helping things much right now either. Injuries are what they are, but I did not expect Toronto to be, I think, as quite as top-heavy as they are. Top-heavy teams can make the playoffs all the time. They always do. But when you're talking about Stanley Cup contention, you cannot be rolling out one or two lines that are going to get blown off the ice. It's just you saw what a Stanley Cup team looks like in Colorado. Everyone talks about the Nathan MacKinnon line and how great they were. The reality in Colorado was if you were playing against their third and fourth line, you were getting whacked too last year. So that, and I think that is where Toronto wants to be. I just don't think they're there yet.
Yeah, I think you can look at last night's game too and just see how good that third and fourth line, that BMW line, Miles Wood and Mercer and all, like that's a deep team that they've got there. And Toronto, they're still a work in progress. I think we can all agree with that. Travis, really appreciate you taking the time as always, pal. Enjoy the weekend. We'll chat again soon.
All right, take care, guys.
All right, there it goes, Travis Yost, TSN hockey analytics writer. Go check out that piece on TSN.ca. It's a really fascinating read.